Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Wednesday, February 6, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The State Department of Fish and Game is advising Sitkins to take care when feeding swans, care in how you feed the birds, and care in what you feed them. Area Management Biologist Phil Mooney says the department regularly hears from people wondering if it's all right to feed the swans that stop in at Swan Lake downtown. Mooney says the department officially discourages the feeding of any wild animal, but he understands that people are drawn to the huge trumpeters, and the birds, though wild, have also adapted to being fed. The problem? The swans are receiving too much food that is not compatible with their wild diets. Breads, chips, cakes, cookies, and other processed foods are all tasty to people, but swans, especially juveniles, cannot tolerate sugars, starches, and fats in these forms. Juvenile swans start out feeding on macroinvertebrates and then graduate to aquatic plants. Mooney says that late-hatching swans may not have fully adapted to this change by the time they arrive on the lake. Giving them the wrong food at this point may be harmful. Mooney advises people who want to feed the swans to think about dark lettuces, spinach, and alfalfa sprouts. Chopped celery, carrots, or potatoes are fine, as are grains like whole oats, brown rice, lentils, split peas, and cracked corn, which is available at the local pet store. And while it's not illegal to feed the swans, it is against the law to harass them or other waterfowl on the lake. That means keeping dogs out of the immediate area. And Mooney also recommends giving the swans room to feed without stress. He says if you want a good close-up photo, use a telephoto lens. In another story related to wild birds and foods, the Alaska Raptor Rehabilitation Center in Sitka has lost its first patient to lead poisoning. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Jen Cedarleaf is the center's avian rehabilitation coordinator. She says the bald eagle was found ailing in Ketchikan on January 14th and was delivered to Sitka for treatment the next day.
He could not stand. He was sitting on his hocks, I guess you would call them. He had some mucus discharge from his mouth, and it was he sounded very congested when he would breathe. He had a hard time keeping any fluids down that we tubed him. And he also was standing kind of with his wings out in a, so if you looked at him, he looked like a triangle.
Cedarleaf says this is probably what eagles do to maintain their balance when stressed. Cedarleaf says the Raptor Center's veterinarian, Vicki Vosberg, made her initial diagnosis based on the symptoms, and an X-ray confirmed it.
Well, he had three little pieces of lead in his stomach when we first X-rayed him. Then when we X-rayed him the next day, he had already passed two of the small pieces of lead and only had one left in his stomach.
Cedarleaf says it's impossible to know how much lead the eagle originally ingested or where the lead came from. The pieces were too small to be identified as fragments of a bullet, fishing lure, or something else entirely. She says that just because lead poisoning in eagles is rarely seen in Alaska, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily rare everywhere. The Raptor Center in Minnesota, she says, sees several cases each winter.
I think the reason we don't see them is just because we live in such a huge state and there's so much wilderness that a lot of the times the birds, you know, they could ingest the lead, fly off, and then it doesn't affect them for maybe a week.
There are drug therapies for lead poisoning, but the Raptor Center had none because cases are so few and far between. And Cedarleaf says surgery wasn't an option since the bird was too far gone for either. It died on January 17th, 2 days after arrival.
If I never see another eagle die from lead poisoning, it'll be too soon because it was just not a fun thing to watch this poor bird suffer and knowing that there's really nothing you can do.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Last week, the Sitka Jazz Festival brought students and professional jazz musicians together for workshops and concerts. In a series of audio postcards, KCAW takes you behind the scenes to hear what went on when an audience wasn't there. Bob Athade is the music director at Stanley Middle School in Lafayette, California, and the recipient of numerous awards for outstanding teaching. He led a workshop at Sitka High where students from across Southeast Alaska learned about the art of improvisation. In this audio postcard, Athade talks about the importance of practice and how he hopes to inspire students to pursue music.
We're going to end by learning a blues tune called Birth of a Band, and I'm going to have the Air Force blow on it. It's really complex. Stay with me. It's by Quincy Jones.
Well, without any guidance, we take the path of least resistance. And musically speaking, it's easy to make wrong choices. So I had great teachers that showed me things. So I just tried to synthesize that and also simplify it, not to make all this jazz improvisation stuff a mystery, right? Ready? One, two, three. I'm a firm believer in the Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers. And, you know, it's a 10,000-hour rule. And so someone my age who plays better than I do spent more time practicing. I don't give in to the talent thing too much. I just think, just keep trying at it. And the nice thing with music is if you make a mistake, nobody gets hurt.
Your turn.
I'm just trying to be engaged with the energy in the room, and I try to say and do things that would uplift and open opportunities for kids or adults or whoever, and not shut them down. So I want them walking out launched feeling like, wow, I can do this.
And that was teacher and musician Bob Athaid at Sitka High School, where he led a workshop for horns called Working It Out. Tomorrow we'll join the Air Force Band, the Greatlanders, and other musicians who will discuss jazz technique and what it takes to be great. Wrangell's Boy Scout Troop 40 is in Anchorage as part of a youth contingent presenting at the Alaska Forum on the Environment. The scouts worked alongside the Forest Service and the Sitka Conservation Society to eradicate some invasive plants on the Stikine River, amongst other projects. KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
Last summer, Wrangell's Boy Scouts got wind of something smelly near Roosevelt Harbor on Zarembo Island.
I was over there with my husband, and we were walking our dogs, and we noticed how much trash there was where it wasn't even safe for the dogs to walk. And so I mentioned it to the boys, and they were like, hey, let's go clean it up.
That's Assistant Scoutmaster Kim Powell. She says the Forest Service paid for the troops' transportation to the island so the boys could get to work. Seventh grader Caleb Groshong says it was a tough job right from the start.
We went down there and we heard about all the garbage, and we went and cleaned up a lot of it, because when people hunt up there, they throw beer cans and nasty stuff all on the road, cars and the batteries we couldn't pick up, and tons of trash in the ditch.
They spent the weekend picking through piles of bottles, beer cans, tires, cigarette butts, and abandoned vehicles. By the end of the trip, they had cleaned up over 2,000 pounds of garbage, including 45 gallons of aluminum cans. Seventh grader Timon Teat says that's why the Forest Service contacted the troop when they needed help with an environmental project at Twin Lakes.
They thought we were really good at Roosevelt and everything, so they thought they can send us up there to help with the invasive weeds, to get those out like we did with the garbage.
The boys took a boat up the Stikine River to Twin Lakes, where they worked alongside representatives from the Forest Service, the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, and the Sitka Conservation Society. They spent 5 days in the wilderness getting rid of invasive plants like dandelions, buttercups, and reed canary grass. Invasives are aggressive non-native plants that pose a threat to an area's native species. Glenn Smith, a father of one of the scouts, went up as a chaperone. Smith says the trip gave him the opportunity to learn new things alongside the boys.
And it was kind of neat to go up there, and I had really no idea that the invasives were around. And everybody looks at dandelions that grow along the road up here. Well, there's definitely dandelions up at Twin Lakes. And the buttercups, you know, and a lot of people like the buttercups around, but they will take over any open spot that's there. And they've definitely got a good foothold.
The scouts used hand tools to dig up small patches of invasives. The scouts worked long days, but had some time at night to explore the wilderness around them. Freshman Curtis Wimberly says they used technology to look for some of the more elusive animals.
We had a bat detector that would send out like a high-pitched screech like a bat would have, and then it would try picking up, and if any bats screeched. I don't believe we found any, though.
What did you find there? You said there was one kind of animal that you found that was really rare.
The long-toed salamander, and they put it on their GPS and sent it back to Sitka, where it was recorded, because they try to record every spot they find one.
After finishing their fieldwork, the scouts decided to take their project one step further. They applied to be one of the groups of youth presenters at this year's Alaska Forum on the Environment and were accepted. They'll be doing a slideshow and giving a speech about their project in front of a full auditorium of scientists, elders, policymakers, and press. Scoutmaster Shirley Wimberly says this is a big opportunity for the boys, but it will be a challenge for them as well.
You know, most of them have not really done this kind of presentation, and they are fairly young. So just hoping that we can get it down pat and look like a cohesive group and just show the people that, you know, we can do it.
Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
The National Weather Service says there is no threat of a tsunami in Hawaii, Alaska, or the U.S. West Coast after a powerful earthquake struck in the South Pacific. The U.S. Geological Survey says a magnitude 8.0 undersea earthquake struck near the Solomon Islands on Wednesday local time. A small tsunami generated by the earthquake damaged dozens of homes in the Solomons. The Warning Center says tsunami warnings for elsewhere have been canceled. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. It's currently partly cloudy outside downtown Sitka, with we expect highs around 42.